As the children told us, the birth of Christ, the coming of our Lord, is about hope, peace, joy, and love. And when does this Advent occur? Well, ask any child and what will they tell you? We can count on it at least once a year, December 25th. And why was December 25th chosen as the day and the time of year to celebrate the birth of Christ? An event which nobody knows when it exactly occurred. The best guess is probably around 5 or 6 BC. And now, again, also the best guess, the most recent, is either probably in March or April or October. But I don't know one researcher who suggests that the actual birth of Christ happened in December. But December is still the right time to celebrate Christmas, at least in this hemisphere. And why is that? It's the longest night. It's the darkest time of the year. There are many ways to answer the question, when is Christ's birth? And one answer is that it happens on the darkest night. It happens in the darkest time of our life. Another answer to the question is that it happens this moment, this present moment, right now, and that it is always happening right now. So if we can find ourselves in the present moment, then we are there. And open to hope, peace, joy, and love. And yet, to get to the present moment, paradoxically, requires a journey. It's the journey of the shepherds, the journey of the wise men, even the sheep and the cows. And, of course, Mary and Joseph. But it's also our journey. Our journey into and through the darkest night and to the moment and the time when the light can be born. Now, last Sunday, we were hearing a story about a couple of mountain climbers and a very dark week in their life. And I left that story unfinished. I had enough people come up to me with enough questions that I decided to continue it. Two main questions I heard was, what happened to Joe? And what about the guy who cut the rope? So I want to continue the story. And today, keeping in mind the question, because we're not yet to Christmas yet, keeping in mind the question, how do we get through the darkest days and the darkest nights, so that we can truly be present in the present moment when Christ is born. For those of you who weren't here last Sunday, a quick recap, and also the correct title of the book, Touching the Void by Joe Simpson. And there was a PBS documentary on this story, too. Joe Simpson and Simon Yates were British mountaineers who had planned a trip to the Andes to climb a 21,500-foot ice peak and then to descend and to return back to their base camp, which was several days' journey by foot or donkey to the nearest road. No one had ever climbed successfully the route that they were about to undertake, and they thought that it was a great adventure. They said that mountain climbing helped bring them into the present moment and to the immense joy and pleasure of simply being alive. It took them 2 days, but they made it to the top of that peak and were very grateful to be there, and also aware of the difficulty of the climb down. Apparently 80% of mountaineering accidents happen on the descent. And it was not far into the descent when there was a whiteout and they got lost and couldn't find their way. And Joe fell off of a piece of ice and fell quite some distance and broke his leg very badly. At the realization that his leg was broken, he assumed that he would die right there, because he knew there was no way that Simon could get him back all of the miles down the mountain, across the glacier, and back to base camp. But Simon didn't give up on Joe. Simon did not say, "I'll go get help," because there was no help to go get. They devised a system of tying 250-foot ropes together to make a 300-foot rope, where then, with a kind of a pulley system, Simon would sit in the snow and lower Joe down the steep mountain slope, 300 feet. And when Joe was at the end of the rope, so to speak, he would get himself settled in the snow and then slacken the rope and give a little tug on it, and that would be Simon's cue that it was time then to untie the rope for him to descend and for the process to continue. This went on quite some distance down the mountain until there was another whiteout, inability to see a thing. And Simon let Joe down the rope, and there was never any release of tension on it. And that was because Joe had fallen over another ice cliff and was hanging in midair at the end of this 300-foot rope. Simon is sitting in the snow, holding the rope. There's a vast wind blowing. The temperature is 80 degrees below zero with the wind chill factor. And Simon sits there for over 2 hours with a tight rope, having no idea what happened to Joe. The snow under him is melting, and he's starting to slide himself down the mountain. And his mind just realizes that there is nothing else to do at this point other than to fetch his knife out of his backpack and cut the rope. Even though by so doing, he's breaking one of the greatest taboos in mountaineering. He cuts the rope. It's nighttime at this point. He digs a snow cave and spends a sleepless night, being certain that Joe's dead. Joe had been hanging over a cliff with 80 feet below him of a fall, and when the rope was cut, he fell that 80 feet and then fell into a hole, into a crevasse, and another 80 feet down, and was lost in a dark cave. He tied himself in a little slope that he was at and spent himself a sleepless night. Next morning, he realized that the only way, possible way, of being saved was to go down deeper into the darkness and the depths of the crevasse, because there was no way to go up. He said it was the most frightening decision he ever made in his life. But down he went, another 80 feet, until he found himself on a slope of snow. And about 50 feet over, across this slope, could see some light. there was a hole in the crevasse and a slope that he could climb. And he did. And he climbed out of the depths of that darkness, bit by bit, with his broken leg and into the light. And that's where we left him last week. He was exuberant, laughing, so overjoyed to be in the sunshine again, until he realized that he still had a glacier to cross, and then rocks and boulders to climb down before he could reach the base camp. And he knew that the chance of doing this, even with two strong legs alone, was very slight. So what happened to Joe? And what did he do in that dark time and that dark week? He had no water. He had no food. He was severely dehydrated. And he had a long journey ahead of him. Do you know what he did? What did he do? You know what? Starting a fire would have been a fabulous idea because it would have gotten them warm, wouldn't it? There was absolutely no wood. There was nothing, in fact, that could help him. He realized he needed to get moving. And what he did was he set himself very small, incremental goals. Kind of like, how do we get through the dark times? One day at a time. Except for him, it wasn't one day at a time. It was 20 minutes at a time. He would set himself a goal of crawling a certain distance across the glacier. And he would look at his watch and see, okay, I'm going to get there within 20 minutes. And he would do his best. And if he got there 2 minutes early, he would be exuberant. And if he got there a minute or two late, he would just be so upset with himself. Then he'd set the next goal, and the next, and the next. He was able to find Simon's footprints. Simon had gotten up the next morning, certain Joe was dead, and had started down across the glacier himself. He found Simon's footprints, followed those, crawled after those for a while, until there was another snow blizzard and all the footprints were gone. I don't have time to go into all of the details of how he made his way down. But he crawled. And when he got to the rocks, he put his leg into a makeshift cast and hopped until he got to where he would be able to see whether the base camp was still there. Because by that point, when he realized he might just make it, he realized he might indeed be too late. He would get to the base camp, and no one would be there. But he crawled, and he went step by step, and made it to within 200 or 300 yards of the base camp in the early hours of the morning of which Simon would have been leaving that base camp. And he called out Simon. And Simon heard him in the night and went that last 200 or 300 yards that Joe was not able to make and took him in his arms. Joe survived. He survived by not looking at the full immensity, the impossibility of the task ahead of him, but by just going one step at a time. And that's how we get through our darkest times, is one step at a time. Now, what about the guy who cut the rope, Simon? First of all, if Simon had not cut the rope, Joe would have frozen to death in midair, and he would have been holding a rope that held a dead man. Also, if he had not cut the rope, he himself would have slid down the mountain over the cliff, and then you have two hanging bodies and no help at all. So what he did was very courageous. So he is still being held in not good eyes in the mountaineering community for having taken that life-saving step. But he cut the rope. And then, as I said, he spent the night in the snow cave. He looked for Joe the next morning, called for him, was certain he was dead, and so then he began what he thought was going to be a deadly climb down the mountain himself, because just doing that journey alone is nearly impossible. But then on the way, he came to the point where he realized, I just might make it back to base camp, where there was one person, by the way, a non-climber, who was there, kind of minding the camp. And then Simon thought, what am I going to tell Joe's parents? And then Simon thought, certain Joe is dead. I wonder what story I can make up that will make me look a little better in this disaster than I actually am. And for some time on his descent, he thought about what he might tell the rest of the world about what happened, because, of course, there were no eyewitnesses except Joe, who was dead, presumably. Simon got back down and met the companion that was there. And what do you think he did? The truth of what had occurred poured out of him, and he told his companion exactly what happened and how it happened. That's also how we get through the dark times. In fact, Christ is the way and the truth and the life. Central to our theology is the truth. It is our compass point. It is what enables us to navigate impossible navigations. By having truth as our magnetic north, Simon told the truth. Now, the consequences of telling the truth are not always so obvious. But in this story, can you imagine if he had made up a story? Can you imagine? And then he hears 3 days later, Joe calling him in the night. Oh, God. He would at least have a little bit of a mixed feeling about going out and saving his friend. And can you imagine having a mixed feeling about saving someone's life? He told the truth. And when he heard Joe's voice, he felt nothing but jubilation. Joe, by the way, one of the first things that he said to Simon when he was found was he thanked him for trying to get him down the mountain. And he said, in terms of cutting the rope, that he would have done the same thing. God with us. The goal of the Advent journey is Christmas time, the awareness of God with us. But the truth is that God is with us every step of the way. And the way we can live and embrace the truth of God's presence is by knowing that we can make it through the darkest nights, one step at a time, and that if we remain true to our soul and to our life, there is nothing that we cannot endure. And the hope and the peace and the the joy and the love waiting for us on Christmas Day is worth it all. Amen.